Good afternoon. Welcome back to Cool Your Hills with Lillian Caldwell on AM FM 247 and Lillian's interviews on Passionate World Radio Network, The World in Your Hands. And today our special guest is Dr. Michelle Casto, who is in the process of writing a book and will be getting it released called Heart Empowerment for Empaths. So good afternoon, Michelle. How are you this wonderful, warm and sunny day?
I am great. I'm very excited to talk about our topics. It's an important one.
I think so. A lot of people don't really know what an empath is. And unfortunately, TV has distorted the line between empaths, seers, people who are passed from birth to, you know, generation to generation. And it's given us sort of a mystical while sort of sleazy quality all at the same time because they're trying to make money out of it. So please explain to everybody what an empath is and why it's so important that they should be aware of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and along those same lines, Lillian, they also have sort of put us in the category of like in relationship with the narcissist or the emotional vampires or energy vampires. And that's not true either. So it is an overplayed humanity, but actually all of us have empathic abilities, obviously. Some are just more empathic than others. An empath really is just someone who is wired differently, who senses things and picks up things intuitively. They're very good at spotting people that are kind of lying or misleading. They can walk in another person's shoes, so they have a lot of compassion. It's really, for those who are empaths, it can feel like a curse because you can feel things more deeply than most. And one of the telltale signs is this, like you can't really watch a harsh movie or see something happen to an animal or another human being without getting your heart hurt. So to me, they're just really sensitive, coming from the heart people that are sort of misunderstood. And often they find themselves relating with people that are really just coming from more of a self-centered, ego-driven place. And that's where we can kind of get in trouble.
And I think too that because you are more sensitive to other people's needs and they themselves don't recognize it. In our society, I have found that our culture is not sympathetic to people who are sensitive. Mm-hmm. They have a tendency to call them, well, crybabies or some other a lot stronger. Especially if you're a guy and you're sensitive, they keep on projecting this John Wayne image. And I really feel that it's disqualifying guys who could be more than what they are.
Yeah, we're very quick with the labels, that's for sure. And what you said that I want to speak to and speak into is part of the reason why I wrote the book, because empaths do tend to put other people's needs in front of themselves, and they haven't learned to distinguish what their needs are sometimes. Now, this comes from the fact that many empaths that are the true empaths, they often were brought up in dysfunctional families where they were absorbing the energy or trying to caretake or make sure somebody else in the family was okay. And so what happened there was they never learned that their needs and wants mattered or were important. They learned that you have to take care of someone else if you want to keep peace in the family. So what happens is typically they go out into the world and start, you know, having relationships, friendships, relationships and business acquaintances with folks. And they forget that they have needs too and that those needs matter. And that's where our hearts can get hurt. And that's where we can get disempowered with that sensitivity. And add to the fact what you said, which is the world pretty much beats on and beats down people that are sensitive or that show a little bit of weakness, then you can really get a confused sense of self And, you know, how do you navigate such a harsh world? When in reality, the empaths and the heart-centered leaders that are here, they have the gifting, they have the knowledge and wisdom that can help heal a lot of what's ailing the world, but they often don't get the positions. You know, they're often overlooked. They're often ignored because they're not coming across as that dominant male or female. And that is to me something that is ready to be changed.
And I think it needs to be changed. I mean, everybody's telling me that the younger generation is different. They're wired differently. They know things. And when I look at my grandson, he is a complete package already, and he's only 5 years old. I mean, he can work a room. I've never mm-hmm. seen a little five-year-old walk up to people and then work a room like the way he does. So it's obvious that they're born with it. Their DNA has been changed in some way, and I'm not quite sure how. But it's very interesting watching him. And this kid, and he's been doing it since he's been a little kid, has a lot of love to give. He knows the difference between the love he has for his parents and his sisters is different from the love that he has from his two sets of grandparents. It's different from the love he has for his best friend and other adults who take an interest in them. He loves them as well. And this is very complex to see a little boy of five already know this and be sympathetic and sensitive to other people's needs is fascinating, while the rest of us grown-ups or adults are just sort of bumbling around in the dark.
Yeah, it seems so obvious and natural, I imagine. And, you know, those of us who were born that kind of led the way, because I feel that we're all oneness, we're all one humanity, and we're all one family. So those of us that were born that, you know, before time, we laid the groundwork for these to come behind, you know, behind us so that they could create more compassion and unity and love between each other's, you know, peace on earth is a true possibility. What's hurtful are those who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, or what have you, that are still trying to get their relationship needs met or trying to get the position and the influence in the world that is their due, that they are qualified for, that they are, you know, prepared for, you know, and that's the part where you have to take back charge of your own personal empowerment, and you have to heal your heart from some of the wounds that you may have incurred along the way. And that's what I'm a big stand for in the world.
Well, it's hard, I think, for people to reclaim, because I think a lot of people don't want to show their sensitive side.
Mm-hmm.
And that they feel that if they put their sensitive side out there, they're putting themselves at risk. And I think the other thing is that when I was being brought up, I was taught to put others before me, always, which drives my husband crazy. Because I'll put him before me, I'll put my son before me, and I'll make, you know, excuses for them and say, well, this is the way it is, and one has to deal with it because it is this way. And I'm always the last pretty much to consider maybe how I feel. And I think that humanity, especially among the women, don't ask me, I'm not a man, so I don't know what the masculine sides are doing. But I do know among the women that many of them have been taught to put themselves down on the ladder, so to speak, mm-hmm. and put the feelings of everybody else ahead of them.
Yeah, it is a socialized trait, and women often have to use self-care. And in fact, I call, you know, part of like taking back your power is loving and honoring yourself and caring for yourself and putting yourself on the list for sure. If not at the very top, then at the top couple of those rungs. And it is a socialization pattern that we are learning to come into balance with. Because, I mean, you could see it both ways, you know. Self-love is kind of a little bit out of control right now, to the point of like, oh my gosh, everybody's talking about self-love, and that's a little bit to the extreme. You know, when Christian teachings, you know, honor your neighbor as yourself, love your neighbor as yourself, well, that's a whole nother extreme, right? And so we've got, it's kind of coming into balance with knowing when you are should be put at the top and knowing when someone else should come first. And there's a dance with that. To me, that's an empowered person that can choose from a conscious place, that's not in this unconscious, well, this is my role and this is how I'm subconsciously supposed to act based on what other people think. Empowerment is really thinking for yourself and then consciously choosing, well, you know what, today or this week actually needs to be about me, and so that's what I'm going to choose, and that's okay. And I feel that that's important for empowerment. And what happens is a lot of people don't do that until they get sick or something happens where they're forced into that situation, and
yes,
they have to start putting themselves first.
And that's that gets to be a little bit troublesome as well, because then the pendulum seems to swing really wide out on its arc, so that the person who's thinking they have brought themselves back into balance, what they do is they go overboard, and then it's just me, 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 me. And it's very hard to correct it.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly it. It's and really balance is somewhat of a mystery anyway. It doesn't really exist. I mean, you can't stay balanced 100% of the time, but we can find harmony within our system. And harmony within our system is being empowered. And, you know, I talk about the four chambers of the heart, you know, the chamber of renewal, which is letting things go. A big reason why a lot of us are not empowered is because we're holding on to a lot of old pain and suffering and stories, you know, so having the courage to let that go is really important. And then, you know, entering into what I call, it's called the dark heart, but it's not really dark. It's just the part that's been repressed, like some of the feelings where we felt useless or we made up stories that we weren't important enough for our needs to be met. You know, really coming face to face with some of those old programs and letting them go so that we can find the love and the courage and the renewal and the peace to live from that place, from an empowered heart. And transformation has been taught for the longest time, you know, change your thinking, change your life. To me, it really is limited. It is truly the transformation of the heart and the heart chakra and the way you feel about yourself and how much love you're giving to yourself and others that creates the greatest change in the world.
And you have to be sincere about it. I know a lot of people say, well, I'm going to change and I'm going to do this, but they don't do it with their whole being.
Mm-hmm.
You have to turn yourself inside out to have it take effect. You have to wash yourself and inside and then address it.
Yes.
And people don't understand that that's the power that they need to seek. And the only way they can seek it or to find it is to admit to themselves that they need it.
Yes, and that's the change of heart. And it is from the inside out, and it's from the heart chakra out. That's really, our heart is what I call the creation station. That's where it all sort of gets started to be created in a positive or not positive direction. And the heart, you know, the Institute of Heart Math has research that shows that the heart magnitude is like 60,000 times more powerful than anything that our brain or thoughts could come up with. So when we're in resonance and we're in those higher vibrating states of peace and love and courage and acceptance, you know, and we're coming from that place, then we can actually make conscious choices and be in empowerment that actually are workable and that actually do create relationships that are more fluid and harmonious. You know, and we can go to the table and negotiate for win-wins and, you know, just come at life from a whole different perspective. And that's the inside-out approach. You know, and it's not for the faint of heart because, you know, that takes looking at some of the skeletons in your closet and dealing with them. And
instead of going through the mirror with Alice, you have to look into the mirror and actually speak to the person who lives behind the mask, behind the face.
Yes.
And that's what
absolutely
I do. people say, you do what? And I said, I talk to the mirror, because you cannot evade what you see in that mirror. You can pretend, but you cannot hide. It exposes you, and it exposes you behind your eyes as well. And I know that a lot of people don't look at mirrors outside of seeing stray hair to make sure their lipstick is put on or how neat they look in their new clothes. I found very few people who have the strength to look into the mirror and see what's behind their face.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's a great point. It's getting real. And the subtitle is Inner Alchemy to Let Go of Emotional Baggage and Become Loving, Empowered, and Free. And the inner alchemy is exactly what you're talking about. So in the book, I give actual activities like going to the mirror or doing some of this inner processing work, where in the moment where you're having like negative thoughts or an old feeling comes up, you know, what do you do with that? Well, the way you transform yourself from the inside out is to go and go and do the work and have the courage to look, you know, at your own fears and doubts and misgivings and directly move it on through. So it's not taking up residence inside your body and your psyche, and therefore directing, you know, it's like we all have a personal operating system. Now you've programmed yourself in a default setting where, you know, being conscious and doing the alchemy or going to the mirror, however you want to say it, is where the empowerment comes and where you really put yourself at choice, where true transformation is possible.
So if you're going to approach, say, the younger generation, since they're so different from us, what would you do to maybe encourage teachers to work on with kids, say, kindergarten, first, second, and third grade? Because I find that kids at 9 years old, it's the one time in their entire life that they're really exposed to everything, inside and out. They haven't learned yet to shut out or block the light coming in. And they let the dark go out. They do not keep the dark in. But after that, when they hit what my other grandkids used to call the double digits, they changed. It's like night and day, Jekyll and Hyde. And I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, well, obviously the education system is a great place where we could start teaching, you know, heart intelligence and mindfulness and, you know, being present and calming ourselves and learning about the nervous system and all of that. In fact, I think in Europe there's quite a few schools that are doing more progressive ways of living and being, like more being, human being approaches to learning. You know, but definitely looking at, you know, having children learn to be with their emotions, feel their emotions, go within, breathe, you know, really simple techniques that if we learn them as children, it'd be so much easier to go through the rest of our lives knowing that we can actually direct our energy. We have choice about our emotions. We don't have to let our emotions run amok and, you know, take us down a spiral into some of the places that many people find themselves. And if you look at the need for this, I mean, you just got to look at the pharmaceutical industry to see how many people are on pills to try to alleviate feelings or looking in the mirror or doing the work. And, you know, it's a huge out of control beast, you know, because people don't want to deal with their feelings and feelings and emotions. It's all heart chakra. That's why the heart chakra is so key, is we can't be afraid of going there and looking and feeling and seeing what are the gifts that are hidden in that darkness.
And why do you suppose that people are still battling this?
We don't like to wake up. I mean, we're in a spiritual awakening. And if you think about it real basic, nobody that I know likes to be awoken. They like to sleep until they're ready to get woke up. Like if you wake them up before they're ready to wake up, they're usually going to be grumpy at you, right? So people love to sleep. I mean, and that's a literal and spiritual term. I mean, and so a lot of folks are sleepwalking through life, and yet life is calling them to awaken, you know, through divorces, through changes and challenges in life. These are all awakening aspects, which I wrote about in my first book, about how do you awaken to your purpose. And I find that there is a process that we go through in awakening to purpose, but you cannot do a spiritual bypass and not do the heart empowerment work, or you've only got half that equation really working for you. So it's good to be spiritually awake, but then you have to go and you have to do the psychological work around being the best human that you can be. This is my perspective, if you really want to live a conscious life.
Well, I kind of agree with what you say. I mean, I tell my son, I said, you're a very lucky boy, because I'm the first person in our entire family who's not going to be loading you up with emotional garbage from the last six centuries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let you make your own garbage, and you can affix it to your chain and carry it through your life and the lives of your kids and grandkids. But I am not going to drag your feelings down and make you feel inadequate even before you get started in life. I said, people out there would be more than happy to do it for you. And I refused to do it. So I didn't. And when he takes a look around now, he sort of thanks me, because a lot of his friends, I think out of all his friends' group, he and his wife are the only ones that are still married.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you something. And it doesn't mean that the parents did a bad job, because I told him, I said, when you leave home, you're on your own. I don't want you ever come back on a talk show and says it's my mom's fault, because I'll laugh right in your face.
Right.
I said, you leave me where I can take you to a certain level, and then the rest is up to you. And if you mess it up, then you mess it up all by yourself. You didn't have any help from me. And I said, I know you don't want to hear that, but it's the truth. You know, you can only blame your parents for so much, and then the rest is how you know you're making the choices of what you're going to do with the knowledge I gave you.
Yeah, and it comes down to, you asked the question, why aren't people doing it, and kind of ties in there. It's like, we don't know how to let go, right? So some people didn't get parents that were that enlightened, or that gave them that space, you know, and so they got some wounds, as we all did. And but we at some point we have to let it go, you know. I mean, I have a friend who just today finally called to get a therapist appointment because of something that happened, you know, 48 years. Well, he's 48 now, and I was happy for him, but I thought, you know, a lot of it is just letting it go, like, just putting the story down. But we seem addicted to suffering. In fact, there's scientific research that says that when we have negative thinking, that there's actually a chemical that gets secreted that we actually enjoy, right? So we get addicted to bad thinking and stinking thinking, right? And it's real difficult because, again, that's letting go of the baggage.
Gives you a vicarious thrill, huh? Although, if you stop and think about it, there's something to be said about that. When people say, well, this has been in the family. Every generation, there's somebody in the family, and I'm the chosen one. And I almost get the feeling that they enjoy the fact that they're unhappy or depressed, because it gives them a reason to excuse their behavior and to excuse themselves for not being successful, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. We can get a lot of mileage out of our stories and our wounds, and that's the whole point of the heart empowerment. We all got wounded. Life just is that way. I mean, there's a million different ways it can happen. It's just up to us what we're going to do with those wounds. But in the wounds, there's also purpose, and there's gifts, and there's blessings there. If you can learn to get some perspective and be willing to let the victim story go and actually go on a personal evolution journey of growing yourself and learning and learning to love and forgive, which is our main function in life. You know, I think Marianne Williamson said it first, but I've always liked it, something to the effect of, you know, our life is the curriculum for our enlightenment. So everything that happens can serve a purpose if we choose to see it that way. And it can make us stronger and more of a contribution to ourselves and others. But again, we have to let the baggage go, and we have to choose to forgive and to love anyway.
I think you have to bear your naked soul to what's going on. And that's what scares a lot of people. They're comfortable with, if you want to call it sin or whatever you want to call it, wrapped around them because they're protected by all this stuff. But if you slice away or bury yourself, then you're open to what is out there unless you know how to deflect it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Michelle, please tell everybody where they can find you and your first book on the World Wide Web and when you anticipate your new book will be out there.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Well, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, you can find me. I'm Bright Michelle, but you can also find me on my website, which is just CoachMichelleCasto.com, my name. Two L's in Michelle, and the new book, Heart Empowerment for Empaths, will be out January of 2019. And my original book, well, I have several on Amazon, but the one that we briefly spoke of is The Destiny Discovery, Find Your Soul's Path to Success. And that outlines really when you've had your awakening call, what do you do after that and what can you expect once you say yes to answering that call.
Yes, that might be very interesting to know because I do know there are some people who are called.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's people like me who know they're not going to die until they get it right. So what can I say?
Yeah.
I'm going to be here a long time. Couple hundred years, the way things are going. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, no need for you to hear that from me. You can listen to this program with Michelle Casto all over again at PassionateWorldRadioNetwork.com, on iTunes.com, Facebook.com/PWR Network LLC, on YouTube.com/PWR Network LLC, Twitter.com/Caldwell, CAULDWELL, underline S, also on Instagram, Pinterest, wherever audios are promoted. I always kind of feel like a car salesman. But before you go away and stray, Marcus Aurelius had this to say in the 2nd century, shame on the soul to falter on the road of life while the body still perseveres. Thank you all very much for listening. This program will be heard next Tuesday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. on Cool Your Heels with Lillian Caldwell, and will be heard on PWR Network immediately, so don't miss the show. Thank you all very much for listening, and remember, please keep listening. Thank you.